Blog Talk Radio.
The article from March the 18th of this year, a USA Today reported that female suicides tripled when at war. If I could just read the first paragraph here, the suicide with the female soldiers tripled when they go to war, according to the first round of preliminary data from an Army study. The findings released to USA Today this week show that the suicide rate rises from 5 per 100,000 to 15 per 100,000 among female veterans at war. Scientists are not sure why, but say they will look into whether women feel isolated in a male-dominated war zone or suffer greater anxieties about leaving behind children and other loved ones. We will get back to this a little bit more, this USA report of March of this year. It further states that a goal of the five-year research effort led by the National Institute of Mental Health is to identify categories of soldiers most at risk for suicide. The Army suicide rate has more than doubled since 2004 from 10 per 100,000 to 22 per 100,000 among active duty soldiers, surpassing the rate for civilians of the same age and gender. Last year, when National Guard and Reserve data are included, an average of 25 soldiers killed themselves each month. This first slice of data from the study drawn from Army records on 389 active duty suicides between 2004 and 2008 is only a small piece of a sweeping research effort that will eventually include tracking between 30,000 and 50,000 soldiers from basic training onward, says Philip Wang, the National Institute of Mental Health Deputy Director. He said the project could rival in significance the historic Framingham Heart Study initiated in 1948, which uncovered causes of heart disease. Interesting. Results of the Army Suicide Study would be valuable in preventing these deaths in the civilian world, says Thomas Insel. He is the National Institute of Mental Health Director. Okay, I would like to get one of our callers on the line, Blackhawk, who would like to share also specifics of this topic. Blackhawk, are you there?
Hi, Kathy. How are you doing?
I'm doing quite well. I'm glad to have you joining us today. I have you on the air, and I'd like for you to share, just for the next 5 or 10 minutes, if you will, if you'd like to. I just gave a little bit of a backdrop of some historical data that was out in March.
I know
you have some more information. Would you be willing to share that with our audience? Please go ahead.
Thank you. That would be an honor. Hello, listeners. Incident occurred with me personally just before Memorial Day, and I submitted it to my chaplain, and I also submitted it to Kathy, and it was the same topic, suicide prevention, and this is dated the 22nd of May, a couple of Sundays ago. And it states the following. This was sent to the Reach FM and Kathy. Back in the dark ages, I was an instructor. When one of us messed up, I would tell my pups to learn from the mistake, hoping they would not wind up doing the same thing. Here is one that I pray we all may never suffer. Last week, a soldier I trained in 1992 killed himself. He was an E3 then. He made corporal before I got out. Smart kid. I endorsed his application for special training and kept in touch with him over the years. We last spoke 3 years ago. He was an E7 by then and thinking about doing tour number 5 in the pit. I told him that he had spent enough time there and stay stateside, but he went anyway. He got back 2 months ago to find that his wife had left him and then blew his brains out. My mother's phone number was in his effects, and he listed me as a POC. I had told him to keep my mom's number long ago because I knew she could always find me, but I never thought he would need it. The point is, people, he kept it for a reason. I'm not a mind reader, But methinks he didn't have too many folks that he could really relate to outside of the military. That's probably why he kept going back to the pit, because he knew there better than his family at home. We need to do all we can for each other, both in and out of combat. It's tough readjusting. Civilians can't relate, and many of us can't cope. Listen, people, do not be a goof. If you or someone you know is having a tough time, do something about it. You call your clergy, friends, fellow veterans, family, local VA facilities, somebody, anybody. Because remember, whatever you may have survived there, quitting on life when you get back home is not only stupid, but really pisses God off. Because we want you here walking and talking, not in a coffin. That said, if you don't have the number for the crisis line for VA, that number is 1-800-273-8255, and do not become your own worst enemy. Nope, that was a soldier I knew personally, and I sent this down to Reach FM. And we think that people do not listen to us and try to respond, because you see, as I noted in there, civilians can't relate and many of us can't cope. Well, guess what? People do listen to us, and some are trying to step up to the plate. Because the Reach FM, I've been talking to them about 15 years now since I got back, and I couldn't readjust or cope, and that's clergy. Civilian clergy, they didn't know the dynamics of us returning veterans or the stress that we go through, because they didn't have anybody that was trying to relate to them about the things that they are not told that we deal with, that they have got to adapt to assist us. What these individuals have done with a staff of less than about 40 people is following. September, they're starting up with Delaware Christian Academy, a charter school down there for eighth graders. It's also with Faith City Family Church down there in Delaware. And what they're trying to do is, anybody that has a kid eighth graders, they're trying to give them a moral compass. They're trying to get them a moral compass instilled in preparing them for what we have to cope with, and faith-based philosophy about stress and how to regroup when you come back. Now, if they can set something like that up with just 40 people right there, there's a lot more that can be done. They're having an open house tomorrow from 1700 until 1900. And, well, at the end of the show, well, I'll say it now. Anybody wants to get any more information, that number is 302-731-2777. Or you can access them at the web at www.myreachradio.com. But these things like this is what is missing. These things like this is what we really need. I and Kathy is aware, and you guys, if any of you have looked on our website, we had things in regard to the need for clergy, the need for moral compasses being reset, especially when it comes to individuals like ourselves that had a very, very, very serious issue that tested us about being wounded, about being hurt, and trying to reconcile again and become whole, spiritually, physically, socially, and mentally. And so anytime we hear about things like this, yes, Kathy?
I want to break in just a moment. We have a caller in, Tara.
She's the founder and executive director of the National Association of Women Veterans out of California, Sacramento. I want to get her in and get her comments on while she's on the line. We did announce earlier that they're having a first female veteran stand down out of Long Beach, California. And I just want to give her to chime in and provide some comments on the issue of suicide, if she has any, and certainly to follow up with some of just a couple of things that she can add to the issue of we can do more. With the efforts that they're doing out in Sacramento, which is amazing, they're doing an outstanding job. But I would like her to just comment on some of the things that maybe need to be in place. How can we extend our network in just empowering women veterans? Tara, are you there?
I am here, Kathy. How are you?
Would you please chime in just a little bit? While we have this topic here, I think it's so important, and you add such a valuable dynamic to the women veterans, your role, and certainly your efforts out there on the West Coast. Would you please comment? I think it's important that the listeners here are able to have access to what is being generated with this effort.
Mm-hmm. Well, Kathy, over the last year, what I will share with you is that as the National Women Veterans Association of America here in the San Diego area, we try to do collaborative efforts across the state of California. And we also reach out to organizations such as yourself to make sure that we have that platform to ensure that we bridge this gap. There's a gap. There's a disconnect from around the nation as far as what the president and Mrs. Obama has requested from these. And that's for our communities to join together, joining forces.
Mm-hmm.
And the general public, they don't know. There is a disconnect. And they have to also want to know. I think that what I see a lot of from the casework and the raw data that we do on behalf of veterans here in the San Diego area, I don't know how familiar your audience is, but San Diego area, we are leading the nation in Afghanistan, Iraqi returning veterans here in the San Diego County area. We, this women veterans piece, also we deal with the men veterans piece, but our primary focus, of course, is women veterans because that's who we are, but we, of course, don't shun any veteran, but there's a disconnect when we try to collaborate with other veteran service organizations who have been in existence for hundreds of years. As far as the hierarchy, the leadership is not the face of today's veteran. We advocate for the Lakeba Palmer family, who was as cold out in Yemen. Lakeba was 22. Her daughter was 2 years old at the time. And so that's what we're seeing, is that the history has changed, the history pertaining to the face of the veteran of today. And there is a big, big disconnect when you look at who is serving on the various committees all the way to Washington. There's a disconnect there that it's not the individuals who are enlisted. They are people who are admirals and rear admirals, people who have never experienced homelessness, people who don't know what it's like to live from paycheck to paycheck. And so there's a large variation and a lot of different components that we see as an organization have been a challenge. And when the monies are trickling down to these various 501c3 approved organizations, when we send people, veterans, that are on the street, to these organizations, they're getting resistance, and they're sent off to faith-based organizations to be able to try to get assistance. And that's why you see such a large increase in the suicide rate, because veterans give up. They feel hopeless. Mm-hmm. They feel like nobody's listening.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's what they experience. I hear it all the time. You sending them around on a rat wheel. It's all red tape. People are referring them to politicians. The politicians are not doing their casework.
the VA's behind in their casework. They're not willing to partner together to allow other companies to come in and help address some of the casework. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of disconnect and a lot of different facets that as a whole, as a nation, as a whole, we have a call to step up to the plate. Don't sit around and have meetings and meetings and meetings and not get anything done. And that's what we see a lot of.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that you're not going to be able to stay with us too much longer, but I want you to just to speak again about the Long Beach female women veterans stand down coming up this next month. I did mention by mistake Sacramento. Please accept my apologies. But I talked to another group in Sacramento. But I know San Diego is where National Association of Women Veterans is from. Will you just speak a little bit about what the anticipated outcomes will be for the upcoming female stand down in Long Beach next month?
Well, with the female stand down that's being held in Long Beach, I think it's from July the 15th to the 18th, that would be the very first female stand down held in this nation. And I applaud
right.
that organization for being able to do that.
Absolutely.
Secondly, as far as from to have that voice, to have that audience, to have that connect, that's what's been missing for women veterans for a while. But I also want to reiterate and make sure that I share with this audience is that we are military women. Our organization consists, our leadership consists of all prior military women that served. And when you look at the variations in the other organizations, you will see that their hierarchy does not have a lot of leadership from military women. And so that's where that disconnect is, because it's hard to relate to someone who is not really has been in your shoes. So we find that to always be a challenge for military people. Mm-hmm. You know, it's always that we would see that a lot of the women auxiliaries are auxiliaries that have daughters or spouses or speaking from that perspective. But we would actually, as we function from our leadership, it's 10 of us. We all are prior military from various branches with a variation in age. So we thought that that would be important, because we all met those challenges as we continue to advocate for ourselves on an individual basis. And so that's how we became a unit.
Mm-hmm.
The stand down that's being held out in Long Beach, that's just such a blessing for us as a whole, because we will get the opportunity to connect with our sisters. We love our country, and it doesn't change when you get out of the military, but we also, we know what our challenges are as far as our government and us as military and veteran women, but we don't disrespect our country because we still love her. We want to be able to advocate, but we also don't want to be exploited. And so we're excited about the Long Beach Female Stand Down that's going to be held from July the 15th to the 18th out there. And you know, hopefully everyone that's in our area from Sacramento on down to San Diego can be in attendance, you know, to bring about that awareness.
Mm-hmm. Also, I'm going to make the announcement and make sure that Washington State, who too has a very strong women's veterans movement up there with Susan Avila Smith and Minister Robin Lafayette. I don't know if you know either of those ladies, but certainly I'm going to make
yes.
sure that they get that information, because I don't think it's maybe – I don't know, maybe a day's drive from Washington State. They're in Seattle.
Yes.
No, it's not. In that area, general area, I'm sure. But these women have been doing a good work over in Washington State, and it'll be great to see the West Coast just benefit. The women coming together, you can share resources. There's so much information that can be shared in these various platforms you're coming together. And I know, Tara, that you on a different time over there, and you are very busy, so I can understand if you have to leave the program. But I wanted you to be able to share and get this on today's program archived so that I can continue to make reference to it. I think it's important because when you talk about suicide and the various other issues that we face, these are issues that are coming to many women veterans. We share a lot of things, but we're not talking about them amongst each other. So when you're having to be in a situation where you're experiencing such as Black Hawk on the line, a friend who committed suicide, when they're isolated, they're not reaching out or do not have access to someone who can understand. I think that's important. We need to be more compassionate, push to get to that person who we trust. The one thing that I know that's important for us over here is the ground, what we've been doing with the chaplaincy, and to establish a network of trusting professionals that can identify with what we experience and a need for privacy and confidentiality. I think that the professionals have to assume that role and be responsible and use good judgment when they are relating to the issues of women veterans and male veterans also, because that trust is so important. A lot of the issues that I understand or I have experienced with veterans have not been discussed. We are withdrawn and alienated due to many reasons, but one of them is that the lack of trust in the professionals in the particular network that is already established for us at the VA. I think peer-to-peer support is an awesome thing, and it works. Veterans organizations that have identified some of the specifics that happen and occur in our lives, we can share that with understanding. Some of us who have overcome and have been victorious in overcoming some of these particular issues that we deal with, we understand. So when somebody is talking to us or those of us who have overcome or been victorious in dealing with some of our issues, we are a benefit. And there again, Tara, it's so important. I wanted to finish this one point.
But
the disconnect that we talk. Excuse me?
Kathy, there was just one thing that I wanted to share with you. You are 150% correct. Everything that you just stated is correct, and we do need to sort out. We need to find out who those connects are, and it's a challenge. But with different organizations, they should be able to provide the proper referrals, because we do have people that call in and say that they just want to die and that they feel like they want to commit suicide. And so we make sure that we have the proper churches that and the ministers just readily available to call their cell phones if they need that type of connect. And it bridges from the various of religions. You know, even we found that to be something that was able to be fitting for some of the veterans that we serve.
May I interject?
Well, national...
Kathy, excuse me.
Yes. The reason why I want to get this particular point in, the National Center for Women Veterans is having their first summit this year, July 15th through the 17th. I think this is going to be a place where we can exchange a lot of information and resources that is going to be vital for moving forward. I have expressed to the Center for Women Veterans in Washington, D.C., that they need to hear from the veterans. The professionals have one agenda. The veterans, particularly those veterans professionals who have incorporated much of their life into restoring other veterans and to establishing various platforms, they need to hear from us, and I'm hoping that will happen. So as we move forward into that time, Tara, I hope that we can communicate how we can get that reception or that discussion with some of those professionals in Washington, D.C. next month. Excuse me, Brad Cook. I want
Thanks.
You to get in before you forget what you were saying. I'm sorry. But I really want to get in on that topic before Tara has to leave.
No problem. But before you leave, listen, what you were saying there, we're thinking the same way. But in addition, just like this civilian faith-based organization is trying to step up to the plate, we need to try to find some kind of avenue where, because they're asking me, they're ill-equipped, because just like they really didn't know what we suffer and what they have to help us readjust and cope with, because they were not told. You can't fault them because they didn't know. We need to emphasize that if we do have civilian organizations, faith-based organizations that are willing to get the necessary training and or protocol that must be laid in place to afford this type of outreach counseling to us to bridge that gap, they should be vetted in and they should be afforded all the tools necessary to assist us in this endeavor. because the majority of women veterans go back to their hometowns. They are not sitting right there by a VA health care facility or near a post. They are not going to be afforded ready access to a military installation for this type of counseling. In addition, they have to deal with the people in, within their own home communities that have no idea the experiences of that woman veteran. We have got to dadnabbit start making these things known to the general population as a whole so they understand that we are different for a reason, and they must be, they got to know exactly what we're suffering as well, why we don't wear skirts. So, you know, at the very least. Do you understand where I'm coming from, ladies? So anytime that we happen to come across an organization like I was, like I have had the privilege to come across, that is willing to assist, we should assist them too.
But there's not many out there.
We have to find them. I found them. And they have radio stations up and down the entire Eastern Seaboard and clergy up and down the entire Eastern Seaboard that is willing to step up to the plate. We just need to give them the tools to be successful in these endeavors.
Well, you know, this is a dynamic conversation, a dialogue. I'm so glad that it's happening today. It's actually preluding to the summit. And, of course, on July the 10th, we're having the benefit here in Philadelphia. I'm going to send a link over to you, Tara, for your network, where the United States Veterans Program, it's a nonprofit, but it's an awesome, awesome online tool. But they're offering to outlets, to organizations to share and announce their events and venues. So either I'll put Coasty Long Beach event up there because I think it's dynamic that the world knows, the nation knows about the female veterans stand down. We have to be very, very honest about the realities of the gender-specific issues that exist in the military. And also of kind of transitioning, that women-specific have their issues identified as such. I think that a lot of what we go through has been clouded with a professional medical staff, a professional untrained individuals at the VA, as that call has alluded to, but I believe that we can become more empowered as we take on these roles, as starting our own organizations, empowering ourselves, educating ourselves. The one thing that I am concerned about, here we are, most of us are Gulf War era veterans. Now, I have a problem with the Vietnam-era veterans because there were a lot of these women and veterans have a lot of Vietnam-era veterans, the Vietnam Veterans of America, the WACs, and there are other groups of women that were specific to previous war areas beyond Gulf War. Did they drop the ball? I don't believe that their advocacy was inclusive enough to, and their outreach was inclusive enough to hear from what some of the other gender-specific, as it, and in a more is direct dichotomy for me, is the racial distinctions that exist in our ranks. And until you can hear from all of us that are represented in the military, then you are excluding issues because we all are very distinct. The American Indians and the many other Lebanese have very distinct benefits and advantages because they're at the table. The exclusion of the representation at the table where the decisions are made minimizes the services and the attention that we get. I addressed maybe 5 or 6 years ago publicly a statement that I read in the Veterans Integrated Service Network. I was the Women Veterans Coordinator. It was a proposition that they had made to consolidate or to report on women veterans up to 4 years. It was several of these women that I knew. But the one statement that really grabbed me and caused me some serious alarm was a statement that I read specific to African Americans, which was, when dealing with military sexual trauma, that African Americans would get more differently because of other life conditions.
My response to that was, and the post from the website was taken down immediately, was that African Americans are like any other woman. Whatever their perception of a violation is their own, and it cannot be determined by their race or their color. And, you know, the one thing I know, too, is happening amongst these discussions at the table is that the exclusion of some of the voices that need to be heard, it sounds almost ridiculous to hear other people represent us, because I think that whatever scenarios that they draw upon is unfair, and it's a misrepresentation, if you will, for those who need to be speaking on behalf of those who share similar experiences. And I'm not saying that has to do with particularly with military sexual trauma, but I do believe that with just because you're at the table and you want to exclude people. Now, of course, Black Hawk and the trip that we made to Washington, D.C. for the February 15th class action lawsuit was a great example of what has occurred, because at the follow-up meeting of which I was told was rescheduled, I have not received a new date, since March, I think March the 9th or the 11th or whatever date that was to go back. There's a group of people that have determined who's going to be at the table. But these people at the table have an agenda, and we have to be careful that we don't continue to push through. The one thing I know that's crucial for identifying some of these barriers, and that is a change in our political processes from one election to the other, depending on who our elected officials are. And with our recent lame-duck session, that means that when the 111th Congress ended back in January and the new Congress, the 112th Congress, took over, we lost a lot of our support from the previous administration, and we may have gained new support. We don't know until we visit that. The one legislation that did kind of fall through the cracks was the H.R. bill, the House of Representatives bill 809, which was the Women Veterans Bill of Rights. And I was very much pleased with that moving forward, but I think they kind of hoodwinked us and pushed the don't ask, don't tell, and actually that did not make it through the Senate for a final vote. So it fell through the cracks once the 112th Congress convened. So here we are dealing with these various political processes where if you're not involved at every level of this whole transition to getting your benefits or whatever, you lose your momentum. And I think the expectation and the for me and the tradition has been that people give up. Overwhelmed, I'm going to make this one point, I'm going to give you in. People become so overwhelmed in their fight to get knowledge or information that they do wear down. And for many reasons, they're attacked from all ends by lack of support within the system where the help should be.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that was Black Hawk trying to get in. Please make your comment.
Yes, please. And Kathy, listeners, that's even more reason why we should definitely, anytime, the civilian population, okay, needs to be aware of these problems. That's why we need to reset the moral compass. Because guess what? How do elected officials get in? They are voted in, not just by the military, but by civilians, by the nation they are voted in. If the nation is not aware of these type of issues that hamper all of us to receive proper assistance, proper counseling, and proper aid from all areas, we will continue to be ineffective. We must make them aware. They have changed it into a lobby for don't ask, don't tell, when that was not what we were there for. We're there because rape is rape is rape. It doesn't matter what your preference is. The fact that you were violated, you were violated. That's what we're talking about here. And for us to sit here and not let inform the civilian population about how they are changing the dynamics of our objective, our mission, with all these little sundry other issues that overshadow what is needed for the greater good, we're derelict ourselves. Because we are not informing the general public about how we are not being served as a whole because we got one or two people that are sitting in seats that we don't have privy to making decisions for all of us and leaving us out as a result.
But you know, that we all have done letter writing campaigns, and we all started at some place. I think the momentum or the movement that I referred to this as after the book that we did here in Philadelphia back in 2006, I regarded this as a movement when I began to get letters, to get correspondence from Washington State and New Mexico. I got an email identifying an activity. They had a parade back in, I think, January of 2007 or 8, and they referred to it as the first parade for women veterans, but I actually sent them back some documentation on the work to be done in Philadelphia, but it's because we're not connecting. But I think Facebook and our social media has been an awesome medium for bringing us together. That we have New York, who's done a parade, and of Washington State, American Women Veterans. We have women veterans organizations that are all over this country now, but are we connecting? What I do see that's somewhat of a displeasure to me is that when you see, like, the non-military people, which Tara referred to earlier, they're non-military. They're not like us. They don't understand us. They're just totally clueless. They have this group here that I challenged in Philadelphia, Women Veterans Rock. These people, who also was somebody that I had known for years, is a group of sisters. They decided they were going to take on the Women Veterans platform after we participated in an event with the Department of Labor, so forth and so on. But it's appalling to me how they don't have the audacity to try to prostitute our suffering for government dollars just because of their relationship with certain people in high places, quote unquote, okay? So we have to be careful what we sell. Now, what I did tell some individuals, women veterans, was that we have to be cautious about what we sign our names to. I'm going to this at our Philadelphia VA where I've seen sign-in sheets going around. And when I asked what these sign-in sheets were for, they were making reference to something that was totally unrelated to what we were there for. So we have to be cautious and begin to ask questions. We have to raise our own antennas about trusting military people because, first of all, women veterans is a hot commodity right now in our country. There are government dollars that have been designated to help us, but there are those who are dishonest. But the reality is they exist, and they're using us, unbeknownst to many of us as women veterans, in these various programs of homelessness. Now, what happens when they put us in these homeless programs? When they put us in homelessness programs, then we're denied programs for sustainability or for establishing a quality of life or buying homes because the money then has an imbalance. The whole focus is an imbalance. Why would I need to be in a homeless program when I have a home? So when you're getting support to these organizations have put themselves up to the table, and they're getting all these dollars. Even Stand Down is a homelessness program. Those dollars coming out, those dollars for home from the United States Department of Labor, the U.S. Vet program. Those are dollars that were designated for homelessness. We need to be giving money to empower us for housing. I think the home guarantee, home loan from the VA is probably over $400,000. I would rather be empowered, gaining a job, even at the level of my experience in the military, and buy myself my own home than to be put in a program where you're going to have a temporary fix to a long-term problem and empowering and putting money in the pockets of those who have no real desire to support us. But the appearance is that they do by giving these various forms. As much as that's why we need to be empowered. Long Beach, California has done a wonderful job in what they're doing. We have Barbara Lee. We have a lot of strong veterans advocacy through Congress from Washington State, New York. Kareem Brown, who does this piece with the Congressional Black Caucus every September with the Veterans Brain Trust, Detroit, Michigan. Ron Armstead, who is a federal staff member. We have to know who these people are. Write them letters so they can hear from us. Now, what is happening is I would love to do more outreach. because of my connection with all of these people. I've been down here for 20 years, so I probably have a connection through